Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayen. Nasta Prayeshva Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. This morning we'll read a verse from the sixth canto, chapter 12, verse 13. Right? Let's do the synonyms first, if you would, please. Together. Ayu, longevity, Shri, opulence, Kirti, fame, Aishwarya, power, Ashishaha, benedictions, Purushasya, of the living entity, Yaha, which, Bhavanti, arise, Eva, indeed, he, certainly, Tatkali, at the proper time, Yata, just as, Anichyo, of one who not desiring, Viparyaya, reverse conditions. Ayu Shri Kirti Aishwaryam.
Ayu Shri Kirti Aishwaryam.
Ashisha Purushasya.
Ashisha Purushasya.
Bhavantyeva Hitat Kale.
Bhavantyeva Hitat Kale.
Yatanich Chorvi Paryaya.
Yatanich Chorvi Paryaya.
Ayu Shri Kirtir Aishwaryam.
Ayu Shri Kirtir Aishwaryam.
Ashisha Purushasya Ya.
Ashisha Purushasya Ya.
Bhavantyeva Hitat Kale.
Bhavantyeva Hitat Kale.
Yatanich Chorvi Paryaya.
Yatanich Chorvi Paryaya.
Please chant.
Ayu Shri Kirti Aishwaryam.
Ayu Shri Kirti Aishwaryam.
Ashisha Purushasya.
Ashisha Purushasya.
Bhavantyeva Hitat Kale.
Bhavantyeva Hitat Kale.
Yatani Chor Viparyaya.
Yatani Chor Viparyaya.
Ayu Shri Kirti Aishwaryam.
Ashisha Purushasya Ya. Bhavantyeva Hitat Kale. Hitani Yorvi Paryaya.
Ayu
Shri Kirtir Aishwaryam.
Ashisha Purushasya
Ya. Bhavantyeva Tathat Kale. Bhavani Yogi Paryaya. Ayu Shri Kirti Aishwaryam.
Ashisha Purushasya.
Ashisha Purushasya.
Bhavantyeva Hitat Kale.
Bhavantyeva Hitat Kale.
Yatani Chor Viparyaya.
Yatani Chor Viparyaya.
Ayu Shri Kirti Aishwaryam.
Ashisha Purushasya. Bhavantyeva Hitat Kale. Yatani Yor Viparyaya. Anyone else? Okay. Translation. Let's say together, please. Just as a person not inclined to die must nonetheless give up his longevity, opulence, fame, and everything else at the time of death, so at the appointed time of victory, one can gain all these when the Supreme Lord awards them by his mercy. Purport. If you'd like to read. Anyone with the mic, please.
Do you want to read?
It is not good to be falsely puffed up, saying that one's own effort, one has become opulent, learned, beautiful, and so on. All such good fortune is achieved through the mercy of the Lord. From another point of view, no one wants to die, and no one wants to be poor or ugly. Therefore, why does the living entity, against his will, receive such unwanted troubles? It is due to the mercy of chastisement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that one gains or loses everything material. No one is independent. Everyone is dependent on the mercy or chastisement of the Supreme Lord. There is a common saying in Bengal that the Lord has 10 hands. This means that he has control everywhere in the 8 directions and up and down. If he wants to take everything away from us with his 10 hands, we cannot protect anything with our 2 hands. Similarly, if he wants to bestow benedictions upon us with his 10 hands, we cannot factually receive them all with our 2 hands. In other words, the benedictions exceed our ambitions. The conclusion is that even though we do not wish to be separated from our possessions, sometimes the Lord forcibly takes them from us, and sometimes he showers such benedictions upon us that we are unable to receive them all. Therefore, either in opulence or in distress, we are not independent. Everything is dependent on the sweet will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
All right, thank you very much. So does anyone know who is the great sage who has spoken these words of wisdom, which are actually spoken on a battlefield to encourage one of the warriors? Anyone know? Who is the great sage who spoke this? Vritrasura, yes. Vritrasura. What is an asura? A demon, yeah. So somehow this great demon, Vritrasura, has spoken these beautiful words of philosophy. That sometimes you're going to lose everything and sometimes you're going to gain everything. And when Krishna wants to give you everything, you're going to get more than you can handle. So he's speaking these words to his enemy in the middle of a battle to encourage his enemy to fight. Isn't that strange? Not only is he getting all philosophical on us as a demon, but he's doing so in order to encourage his enemy. And can anyone imagine why he would want to encourage his enemy in battle? So that Ritra, the speaker, could beat him, right? Have a good fight?
Right.
That could be seen as like a chivalrous thing. Okay, but he had another. Yeah. That's right. In other words, they're fighting over the kingdom or the heavenly planets. But Vritra just wanted to go back to Godhead. So he wanted to encourage his enemy, Indra, to kill him. And in order to do that, he's speaking these philosophical words. But they're not just empty words. He's a deeply realized great devotee in the body of a demon. So we're going to, this morning, talk a little about his origins and then also the backstory behind it. In the classic Vedic way, we'll end with the beginning. All right? So but the beginning of Vritrasura's life was precipitated by a great offense to a great soul. This was the situation. King Indra was enjoying his lavish party in his own honor in the heavenly planets with all kinds of accoutrements, dancing apsaras and soma and wonderful feasts and all sorts of great material enjoyment. And right in the middle of this, who should walk in but Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods? So just imagine, what would you do under these circumstances? I was remembering when we first started the Bhakti Academy 5 years ago, two of our first students, they told me later that, because it was a smaller affair at that time, and they said, one day, they just looked at each other and said, we got to go get some Starbucks. So they were over at Starbucks. So suppose you were in their situation. You're at Starbucks, and all of a sudden, some devotee who you know well walks in. So what are you going to do? So there's different options. Yes, you can make some excuse. But you might also just pretend like you don't see them, right? That's one strategy. Like they say, the Protestants don't recognize the Pope, the Jews don't recognize Jesus, and two Baptists don't recognize each other in the liquor store. So, in this case, this was a strategy Indra chose to follow. He's thinking within himself, look, what are you doing here? You know, I went to the morning program. Why are you coming now? It's like, so, he just did not acknowledge Brihaspati's presence, as if he didn't see him. And then Brihaspati did not get angry, he just left. So then Indra realized he had made a great offense. And this was because he is a devotee. But Indra is called a Sakama devotee. What does that mean? Desire. He has desires, yes. So there's Akama devotees and Sakama devotees. And they're both devotees. And it's all right to be either one. In fact, nearly all of us are Sakama devotees. We have some desires. Prabhupada said that sense gratification is like salt. There needs to be a little bit in the preparation in order for it to be palatable. But too much will ruin it. So to be an Akama devotee really means that pleasing Krishna is everything in our life, and that's all that really matters to us. Okay. To be a Sakama devotee means there's some conditions to our devotional service. Or I can serve Krishna under these circumstances. So that is good. It's still good to be a Sakama devotee. And if we feel like that, certain conditions in our service, we shouldn't feel like we're somehow deficient or we can't make spiritual advancement. So Indra is very much in that mood. And his kama is much more elaborate than ours. But he's attached to it. He realizes this. He's introspective about it. Srila Prabhupada says that in every desire for sense gratification is the seed of an offense. Okay? So this is manifest in Indra's pastimes here. So he realizes that he's made a terrible offense to Brihaspati. Then Brihaspati rejects the demigods as a result. Okay. So they're suddenly without a spiritual master and in great anxiety, because without the blessings of the great souls, we can't really do anything. This yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tatagara tasyarta kartita yarta prakashante maha. That in the minds of one who is serving more advanced devotees, then all of the imports of the Vedic literature are automatically revealed. That is the secret. In other words, it's not just book knowledge. Just like in academia, you can learn all about a subject, and if you become very proficient in it, then you can kind of tell your professor to go take a hike, you know, because you know as much as they do, right? At a certain point, you can even equal or surpass their knowledge. So therefore, when you're writing a thesis or a paper, it's very important to not be too devoted to anybody, right? If you just submit a paper that says, oh, whatever this guy has said, that's all correct, that's exactly right, you'll get an F. Right? You have to make a new contribution to knowledge. You have to say, he said good points, but he was wrong here and here and here. Right? So spiritual knowledge is just the opposite, the antithesis to a thesis. That when we find a genuine authority in whom we can put our trust, then that act of submission and surrender to that person is what activates the knowledge of the Vedas. That is the that's the indigenous way to get the knowledge. So in other words, the Vedas have the right to say, here's how you can understand us. You understand us through the agency of an active relationship with a spiritual master. So when the demigods lost Brihaspati's blessings, they were bereft and in a position to be overrun very quickly by the demons. So they were advised to get a new spiritual master. So Indra went to a very elevated Brahmin by the name of Vishvarupa, who agreed to accept that role as the spiritual master of the demigods. So Vishvarupa was expert in sacrifices. He was performing a sacrifice, but there was something a little funny about it. He was saying like, Om Shivaya Namaha, Om Indraya Namaha. And actually what he was doing is a little partial to the demons. So he was silently or quietly including a little intonation for, on behalf of the demons so they could also get the blessings of the sacrifice. So when Indra realized what was going on, he was very upset. He was a little upset to the point where he immediately decapitated Vishvarupa. So now Indra was really in trouble because he had lost not only Brihaspati, but now Vishvarupa. So for this sin of killing a Brahmin, he received enormous sinful reactions, but they were dissipated to trees, to water, to women, and to one other. Pardon me?
No, I just never heard that past it before, what you just said, but I've heard that the curse part, I just didn't know where it came from.
Yes. Yeah, this was the way which he was able to assimilate and distribute this sinful reaction, but he was still in trouble. So so then, as the demigods are prone to do, they would go to Brahma first for help, the senior god, and then Brahma said, you have to go to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead for this one. So they went, they approached the Lord, and he advised them, because the demons were now totally overrunning the demigods. So he said, "What you need to get the bones of Didichi Muni in order to get a weapon that's powerful enough to defeat the demons." Meanwhile, Vishvarupa's father, whose name was Trushta, was furious with Indra, and he performed a sacrifice to create a personality who would kill Indra. Vishvarupa. Yeah, Trushta. So he performed the sacrifice, chanted all the appropriate mantras, and this huge, powerful, fiery personality emerged from the sacrificial fire. This was Vritrasura. So he was born, he was created to kill Indra. But in the conduct of the sacrifice, Trushta had just said one syllable wrong. So instead of creating someone who was going to kill Indra, because of this one little mistake, it came out a personality who was going to be killed by Indra. So that was the background of Vritrasura. So with Vritrasura at the head, the demons overran the heavens. They were in control of the heavenly planets. The demigods were all on the run. So Lord Vishnu told them, you need the bones of Didichi Muni in order to get a weapon powerful enough to defeat this Vritrasura. So they went. The demigods went to Didichi Muni, and in a very feeling way, they explained their plight and their situation. So Didichi Muni was very wise, and he played with them a little bit. He said, "You want my body? But how can I enjoy sense gratification without this body? This body is very important. Oh no, I couldn't possibly part with this body. And then the demigods got kind of philosophical with him. Of course, he was very wise. He knew everything. But in this way, he was drawing out of them something beyond their just immediate, urgent material desires. And they started preaching to him, well, you know, this body is going to die and anyway. And after he played with them a little bit, he said, yes, I would. I know I'm going to lose this body, so I'd rather lose it for a noble purpose like this. So in this way, he sacrificed his body. His bones were ground up. And from this rather tremendous sacrifice, Indra gained a thunderbolt weapon that could defeat Vritrasura. So now they confronted each other on the battlefield. And the first thing that happened was all the demons ran in fear of Indra and the demigods. So Vritrasura, their commander, chastised them very severely. He said, you're not your mother's babies, you're your mother's stool. And then the demons still didn't rally. They kept running. And then he chastised the demigods because the demigods were chasing all of these demons and shooting them in the back. He said, what kind of Kshatriyas are you, shooting your enemies while they're running away from you? Why don't you fight me? So very chivalrous and powerful Vritrasura. So then he defeated the demons, and then he was fighting with Indra, and he defeated Indra, or at least sent him back. And Indra was ready to quit the battle. So this is when he speaks these words to Indra. Look, sometimes you're going to lose and sometimes you're going to win. God's in control, and if God wants you to lose, nothing you can do will change that. But if God wants you to win, you cannot imagine the opulences of your victory. So in this way, he's encouraging Indra to get back in the fight, which he did. And then Indra managed to cut off one of Vritrasura's arms. And still Vritrasura kept fighting with one arm. And again he defeated Indra, knocked him back. And again Indra wanted to quit. And again Vritrasura got on his case. Look, I'm fighting with one arm. What's your problem? So then Indra realized that this was a great devotee. And he began talking with Vritrasura about devotional service. A very strange phenomenon in the middle of a battle. But he was appreciating him. You are certainly a wise and realized soul, and you understand the value of devotional service. So then Vritrasura said, yes, but you should win this fight because I just want to go back to Godhead. So in this way, Indra understood, and he continued with the fight. But then Vritrasura did something very mystical, even though he had only one arm. Well, I think by that point he'd actually lost his other arm. But he swole up into this gigantic size and he swallowed Indra and his elephant, Airavata. So Indra was stuck within him. And everybody thought that Indra had lost. But Indra kept his poise and managed to emerge from the belly of Vritrasura, like in the movie Alien. So Vritrasura, and Indra then took this thunderbolt made by the bones of Dadichi and began cutting off Vritrasura's head. And because he assumed such a gigantic size, that act took a year. It took an entire year to decapitate him, but he finally did. So who was this personality, Vritrasura, after hearing all of these descriptions? And Maharaj Pariksit wants to know, well, how could this great devotee have been such a hideous demon and been so troublesome to the gods? So and then Shukadeva Goswami begins explaining the backstory. So the backstory begins with this great king, Chitraketu, who was an incredibly opulent king. He ruled the entire earth. He had an enormous harem of wives, dozens, thousands of beautiful wives. But by coincidence, they were all barren. Confirmed. just by coincidence, they were all barren. So they could not produce a child, and therefore he had no heir. And he was, in spite of having so much opulence, Chitraketu was very unhappy. So one day, the great sage Angira Rishi and Narada also came to visit him. And they said, "You look very sad. What's your problem?" And he said, "Well, I have no son. And therefore, we're going to, when we die, we're just going to go